Welcome to the Hostile Zone.
Use your voice and nobody hears you.
Welcome to the Hostile Zone. You're with the infamous and dangerous and always in your face, pulling back that curtain on waste, fraud, and abuse, and overall wasting of public dollars and societal issues. I am Eric A. Sonati, Eric Andrew Sonati, real big A.
Eric Sonati, of course.
Right here on your iHeartRadio dial, on your FM dial, all of social media, Stream Live TV, Fire TV, Apple TV. If you're not on your cable, demand it. So, Hostile Zone, where truth is a weapon and silence is surrender. Tonight, America stands at crossroads, not of politics, not of parties, but of principle, where we confronted not by theory, but by raw wounds of violence. It's just too much violence. And the shattered voices of children, and the haunting question of whether we still know how to protect our own. In Utah, the voice of Charlie Kirk silenced in an act of assassination. A bullet delivered on a university stage struck down not only a man, but a sacred covenant of free speech, the very foundations of our nation. Free speech. His alleged killer, we say alleged because, again, we don't convict anybody here on the show or in any of my media appearances. Alleged killer was hunted, captured, and now sits in custody. But the damage is done. He's done. We must speak Charlie's name in reverence, with reverence. Not for ideology or what he stood for, but for the principle that in America, debate must never be answered by violence and death. In Minneapolis, Annunciation Catholic Church, a sanctuary of faith, became the theater of horror. Two children, just 8 and 10 years old, were murdered during a mass shooting. Their attacker ended his life with a self-inflicted gunshot, leaving behind the pews in that church stained with terror and families who came to pray left mourning. In Evergreen, Colorado, another school shooting, a six-year-old unleashed gunfire on his classmates, critically wounding two before turning that weapon on himself. Another set of parents forever changed, another school community forced to live with the echoes of shots fired in the ivory hallways meant for learning and laughter. And in New York City, officers faced an armed teenager who chose to bring chaos to the streets, firing an illegal firearm with an extended magazine, but extra rounds. Shots rang out. Two 15-year-olds were wounded in the leg, one of them in the leg. This was not a random tragedy. This was the predictable fruit of precedence, maturity, and the violence that walks hand in hand with our adolescence. Taken alone, these events are tragedies. Taken together, they are an indictment that reveal a fracture deeper than politics. Bullying that eats away identity. Abuse and abandonment that leaves scars, deep scars, invisible but permanent. Digital echo chambers that radicalize the lonely and institutions that react to blood spilled instead of before a trigger is pulled. reaction. Fear is the instinct. Fear is the reflex. Fear is the contagion that spreads faster than truth. But fear will not heal us. Fear will not save us. Fear will not raise our next generation. The harder path, the only path worthy of a nation that still believes in its promise, is love sharpened with strength. Boundaries forged with wisdom. Parents who confront their own unhealed wounds so that they can guide without repeating the same mistakes themselves. Communities that refuse mistakes. Communities that refuse to trade in silence for comfort. A people who choose courage over control, connection over chaos, and clarity over confusion. Because let us be clear. A nation that cannot protect its children has surrendered its soul. But a nation that dares to rise and face its failures can transform grief into guardrails and scars into shields, and a nation that can still redeem its future. And I will not accept for one moment that America is destined to fail her children. Not on my watch. Not while voices remain here on this set and on the people that watch and listen to me and us and everybody else on the network, while parents are in pain and teachers and leaders are still here to lead. Tonight, we do more than report, though. We reckon and demand the answers. We call for accountability. And we, as a group, are committed ourselves, each one of us, to fight for our future, where children inherit, not fear, but they inherit hope. So with that relevant quote of the day, relevant quote of the day, children are the living messages we send to a time we will not see. Children are the messages of a time we will not see. John F. Kennedy. Oh. And moving forward, right? Our guest tonight, and I totally didn't do the whole Bianca intro, but we're going to get, oh, I tricked you. I moved it. our guest tonight is more than an author. She's a fighter on the front lines of America's most important battle, the battle for our children. Deborah Beck, founder of Empowered Teens and Parents, has dedicated her life to rebuilding the fragile bridges between parents and teens, taking on the role of mentor, retreat facilitator, and truth teller at a time when families need it the most. Her latest book, What If Your Teen Isn't the Problem, is not simply pages of advice. It is a manifesto of fear against disconnection, against silence that has a cost to many families, their futures. Through empowerment, teens and parents, Deborah has guided countless families in breaking cycles of miscommunication, healing wounds, and building trust. And from her award-winning book, In My Feet Aren't Ugly, to her one on family retreats in Sedona, she has waged a tireless campaign to prove that America's youth do not have the casualties of broken homes, anxiety, or cultural chaos. In a world where headlines remind us of lives cut short and schools turn into battlegrounds, Deborah Beck is here tonight to remind us that the fight for our children is not lost, that it can be won, not with control, but with awareness, not with fear, but with courage, not with silence, but with love that leads. But I would be remiss if I did not introduce my lovely co-host, Miss Bianca C., the lovely, angelic, stylish, and powerful beauty with stilettos, although you can't see on right here on set, beauty with stilettos, but commands authority through compassion and love and leadership. Miss Bianca C., welcome to the battlefield again.
Thank you. Bianca C., that's me. Hello, everyone.
How are you?
I'm doing fabulous. Thank you.
Yeah, this is a, I don't like reporting on negativity, but I think it's important, and I'm really excited about our guest, because I feel that Deborah is going to bring something. I think that people need healing. They need to know, absolutely, how can we recover? How can we move forward? Because it's not about what happened. We already know that there has been damage done. Mm-hmm. We already know that there is pain and suffering. But, you know, she's going to tell us how to make it happen here. So okay. Let's bring in Deborah. Atlas, let's bring Deborah into the show. Welcome, Deborah. How are you today?
Great. Thank you for having me.
Oh, it's a pleasure. I thank you for coming here. I thank you for all that you have done for, you know, you've done some wonderful things with your program and your books and your retreats. I heard some wonderful things about the retreats. It's wonderful stuff. So what we'd like to do is we have a couple questions, like four or so, and each one will have one from me and a follow-up from Miss Bianca. But I'd like to start with you giving like 30 seconds of it, you know, a little bit. I think I told the people who you were, but what you want everybody to know, the viewers and the listeners.
Well, I think I try to bring harmony into the family and hopefully get parents to listen to their kids. I think that's the toughest part, is having parents understand what's going on with them so that they can hear their kids. Because parents say, my teen shut me out. And teens say, my parents can't hear me. So I'm trying to bring that together and just make it more about love than fear and control. The whole relationship.
Yeah. Very much. Yeah. I agree.
Yeah. I mean, you're making a difference. My hat's off to you. So segment one, we're going to talk about parenting from fear versus love. So Deborah, when a parent reacts from fear, whether it's fear of losing control, fear of failure, fear born out of their own childhood scars, they create a distance instead of trust. So Deborah, how does a parent retrain themselves in the very heat of a trigger to pause and breathe and lead from love instead of nonsense violence?
You know, I don't know if they can train themselves, to be honest. I have a process that I use where we look at their childhood and we, you know, everybody sees things through their own lens. For instance, my dad was a binging alcoholic. My mother was depressed and my sister was angry. And so my little girl didn't go, wow, you guys are really messed up. My little girl said, I'm not good enough. I'm not important. I'm not in control. I'm not safe in the world. So if I don't know that, I will project that onto my kids.
Right.
And so, or I'm not considered. So knowing yourself really well, knowing your wounds, your old beliefs, then you can actually try to manage it by saying, okay, there it is again. There's that old belief. And then you can breathe. But if you don't know it, you'll get hijacked by that part I call the ego that right. is ready to come in and save the day from what they see as a fearful situation, which is this right. their kids acting out.
You know, it's funny. What you say really is impactful, because it's almost like any kind of addiction or whatever. You have to admit that there's something going on. You have to admit I have a problem, or right. there is something. Because if you don't admit that something has occurred or it is currently happening, yep. you're never going to move forward. So you really hit the nail on the head with that one. I really... Yeah. Do you find that it really is effective? And it's, I mean, are they receptive to you having them? Yeah,
definitely. I think sometimes parents more than not call me and say, oh, I need to fix my teen. And I will choose to work with the parent more than the teen, or bring them into retreat or mentoring. But if I can work with, usually it's the mother, I can right. change an entire family dynamic by just having her manage her reactions through right. knowing herself to where she can breathe. Because if she can't stay regulated, the teen is never going to regulate. Never. And the teen will feel misunderstood and just unheard. And so we're really working with the parents is key.
Right.
I mean, their own wounding.
Yeah. And Deborah, how do you stay calm when your child hurts you?
Yeah.
Hurt you physically or emotionally? What are we talking about?
Yeah. Oh. I'm
I would say both.
Yeah.
Both? Well, I don't know. If you haven't done the work, it's hard to stay calm because they get hijacked. But let's say, because a lot of parents come in and say, oh, my teen said this. They're so they're disrespecting me. And I'm like, no, they're just being a teen. They're acting out. Manage your own emotional state so that you can hold space for the teen. Now, hurting, believe me, I've heard stories. And it's funny because one of the biggest stories that I heard and actually was trying to work with the family, the mom wanted me to work with the daughter. The daughter was just disruptive.
How old on this
one? The daughter was 14.
Okay.
And the spitting on her mother, throwing things. And I kept saying, I want to work with the mother. I don't want to work with the teen. I can do better. The mother would not work with me.
Wow. Oh, there you're. That goes right back to what you said. She's not admitting that she's part of the issue. Right.
Exactly. And I was kind of in no man's land working with the teen. I could do some things and help her be heard. But the reality is, unless I can get to the source, it doesn't work. And so I finally decided in my practice that I was no longer going to work with teens unless I could work with the mother or father as well.
I'm glad that you said father, because I was going to ask you, are fathers engaged? Are you finding that it's mostly single parents? Yeah, right. And as a man, I find that to be, I'm going to be clear. I find it repulsive if you walk away from your child. I do. I don't care what anybody says. I get a lot of nasty emails and bots and trolls. It only helps my numbers. I don't really care about that. Deborah, I think that if you assisted in the process and you are the father, you have a duty to step to the plate. And I think that we are setting these children up for failure by not having them in the home. And it's sad that they're not there. It really is.
Right. But even if they're in the home, they're a father. A lot of times the mother takes on the position of raising them and being the main person. I very seldom get calls from fathers, and they're not in a divorce situation. They're not in that. It's just the father is more in more situations than not, lets the kid just whatever. I don't want conflict. Just give the child what they need. Where the mother's like, no, that doesn't work. That happens more times than not.
Wow.
And so I end up working, I would say 9 times out of 10 with the mother.
Wow. I can't fathom that thought, honestly. I mean,
I know,
but you have always had some experience with fathers though, but just the majority's not.
Absolutely. And I do family retreats, but I do a lot of mother daughters because they're at odds. And so I do a lot of those or family retreats. I've done grandmother, mother and daughters. And I do family retreats. I would love to do more family retreats because I think personally, kids need the father as that masculine energy.
You used a dangerous word there, Deborah. You used a dangerous word.
I know.
Toxic man, your masculinity. I like it. I'm glad you're on the show because you need to have that. You need to have it.
You need to. Yeah. And, you know, a mom can't be that energy all the time. They need the father to come in and hold that space.
Right.
And I mean, I was a single mom, so I know what it was like to be both feminine and masculine and have to take on that role of working and being the father and, you know, doing all that, even though the father absolutely paid child support. He didn't disown it, but he didn't really participate emotionally in their life.
Right.
You know,
my opinion on the father, too, it should not just be disciplinarian. It's a role model. Even if you have a daughter or a son, you're a role model of what a good for a guy, what a father should be like.
Absolutely.
And for a girl, what a good man that you're going to date and potentially make as your mate should be.
Yes. That's so interesting because what I deal with is fathers not having boundaries around their daughters. And I always bring up, if he can't have boundaries, she is going to walk all over him. That will show up in her relationship.
Yes. Later. The man will walk on her. Right. Yeah.
One way or another. She'll rule them or she'll lay down for them. And
or she'll seek validation from them that she's not getting from her father.
Exactly.
Which we all know what happens when the girl seeks validation. Okay. It's going to end up negative.
That love that they don't have.
Yep.
Yeah.
And it's really important. Even if the father, they are divorced, he has to play that role. Because I hear this all the time. They're divorced. The daughter and the kids get what they want at the father's house. And the mother has to be the one that is the rule maker. And I'm like, it just doesn't work.
Yeah.
Our energy is different. I'm sorry. I can only be so man. In the fan, I mean, I'm sorry, I can't.
Right. No, but
I am. Like, I can't. I have a 2-year-old, so I can't, you know, be the person to rough play. You know, it's a 2-year-old boy, so like, I can't rough play because, like, I don't know how to. I feel like I'm the gentle one, and I'm supposed to be the one that you come to when you want comfort. And, you know, and the daddy is supposed to be the fun one and the one that, you know, lifts up the swings and whatever. You know what I mean? So like.
Right. Also,
I mean, traditional roles. I get
yes,
that.
Yes. Yeah.
Right. He needs to play a really important part in. You guys have to be a united front in the discipline, and I find that is not the case a lot.
Really, really.
Yeah.
Let's talk about that for 1 second. I was going to move on to the next segment, but I like that, and I think the folks listening in their cars or watching this on TV, or wherever they are getting it. How does that come into play? Tell me how you think that they regulate that and you make that work effectively. Because you don't want to create rift between the parents either, right? I mean,
No, but unfortunately there is. And a lot of times it's because the dad doesn't want to come in with that energy. He doesn't want to say, no, you can't do it. And the mom's like setting the boundaries. It's so bizarre to me because it's like, no, you need to be together in this. Right. And a lot of times what I find in my business is it's the mothers that are having to do that. And then the dads are more like, whatever your mom says, that doesn't work.
Oh, yeah, that's not good. Yeah.
It does not work because then that makes her the bad cop all the time.
Yeah, good cop. Yeah. You know, it's just funny. That's funny because... And I think, if she's going through that.
I feel like a bad guy when I say no.
But here's the thing. I agree. But
then if my husband says no, I'd be like, my heart feels because he's like saying mommy. And I'm like, no, honey, I'm sorry. Whatever. Daddy said no. And you have to obey. That's it.
I know as a kid, I would say, mommy said I could if you said okay.
And then,
mommy never said anything. She said, ask him. I already said it was all good.
It will totally play you. And it's so much easier when they're young, but when they get older and they've learned the dynamics of the mother and the father,
then they know how to play them. It's like a violin.
They're done that.
Yeah.
You're not playing that with me.
You know, I think as the father in a situation, and correct me if I'm wrong, because you're the expert. Mm-hmm. The father in this process, if it's a boy or a girl, they don't have that natural connection that the mother does having bear the children. And the child knows that they came from within that woman. So when the child is really, really young, up until a certain point where they actually, and I don't want to quote Freud with the ego and superego and the id and all that, but there is a time when they recognize their role in life as the child, the son or daughter, that then the father can be more of the disciplinarian, but he has to build that attachment because people have detachment disorders, right? You want to make sure that there's an attachment between the father and the child, son or daughter, and then you can move into disciplinarian. You don't want to be the bad guy because they know they didn't come out of the man. They know they came from the mother, right?
Yeah.
What say you on that?
Yeah, and I mean, I also think that it would be great in a perfect world if one of the teen did go to the whoever the weakest link is, right? And they go to the mom and the mom says, well, let's go talk to your dad. Let's go together and let's have a discussion about this.
Yeah, family meeting, right? Yeah.
Right. And know that the dad isn't gonna just come in and go, oh, just let him. You know, it's gonna be more of, well, lay out why you wanna do this. Right. And then have the parents say, okay, you need to just give us about 15 minutes and then we're going to talk together and then we'll come back as a united front.
I like that, as a united force. Yeah.
I like that.
Yeah. But and that goes with what I was saying, that you have to have the shot, like your teenage, you have to have them at a point where they recognize and there's a built respect and a bond. Because like there's a bond. A child is a bond with a mother right away. Yeah. You know,
right.
The whole mother laying on that. I mean, the father is absolutely not part of that. If you breastfed or not, there's a whole bonding thing that the man doesn't get. And he gets that, the father, I believe. Again, it's I'm just opinion. I'm not an expert. I think that's where you have to get through that point. And then you could be like, okay, I'm laying the law down and we're going to do this together.
But I do think that fathers can develop a bond differently. I just think they have to show up in a different way. They can't just go to work, be exhausted, come home, not engage.
Right.
And quite frankly, most parents are working now, but the mom still has to show up, still right has to do certain things.
Right.
And so I feel like it's just really important that both parties engage.
Right.
They engage. And I think you can build a bond if the child didn't come through you. I just believe that. I
100% am with you. I think you have to earn that. You have to earn that as the father, as the man. Yeah. You got to earn that right. Mm-hmm. Just like when you're going to date a woman, I believe in chivalry. You open the door, all that stuff. I was taught that and I live by that rule now today, and I always will. And I believe that you have to earn the woman that you're going to date and is going to become your wife. You have to earn your child's trust because you just don't have that bond from day one.
Right.
It's a good phrase.
Eric, I'll let enough. Even though the mother has this bond, that is the most ruptured relationship when they get older. You notice mothers and teens, I have had fathers call me like, if they can't get this together, I can't live here anymore. They have the most ruptured. And it is a total epidemic right now. Daughters cutting their mothers off. So that bond only goes so far. Oh, yeah. And ridiculous reasons, saying it's they're narcissists, they're toxic. And when I'm talking to them, I'm like, that's an overused term. Oh, yeah.
Everybody loves that word. Yeah, they love that word. And nobody has a clue about the DSM-5 or any of that. They don't know what any of the diagnosis, like they just throw out diagnosis. Yeah.
Right,
and
right.
Yeah. Everybody's an expert. You're the expert in it. Yeah.
No, even though the bond is there, it is the most ruptured bond in the family, the mother-daughter bond, which it only holds so tight.
Yeah. Right.
And I have a question, well, is it true, you got to put yourself in your child's position, and put yourself, at their age, how you would think? And I feel like if you talk to your child saying, hey, I know things are bothering you, and if you think that you're going to get in trouble of a question you need to ask me or any advice.
I like that,
That at that moment, don't think that I'm going to get mad at you or judge you right away. I feel like a lot of parents don't do that nowadays. And I feel like, when my child grows up, I want to say that to my child that way, you had that bond. So no matter what, if they're in trouble or something is on their mind for some reason that's negative or anything, I feel like it should be a great way of saying it for them to come to you for trust.
They should, right. Yeah. And I also believe, I want to piggyback on it just so you can come back totally. Because my thought is it all starts with family structure and family unity. Mm-hmm. I believe in actual dinner together with a family at the table.
With you.
At the same time every night, no cell phones at the table. And if you have TV on, something wholesome, something not, news related, something not vulgarity, that's my thoughts. That's how I grew up. And if you remember when we were younger, at 6 o'clock, you had shows on that came on with family. Like I watched Growing Pains. Shout out to Kirk Cameron. Kirk Cameron, I'm waiting for your email back. All right, email me back. All right, already.
Such a good example.
But that's a great show, really Growing Pains, and it came topic. On right.
Yeah.
Family wholesome topics, and they had family right. meetings like you're talking, right?
And you got to learn. You learned things. Yeah. So yeah, I was like going to say regarding being able to hold space for your teen. You really have to be able to manage your own fears inside of you, because what happens, this is a perfect example, a mom, and it's in my book, a daughter came to the mother really concerned about a friend that was vaping, started vaping. And she went to her mom and she goes, "Mom, I'm really worried. Victoria's vaping." And that is as far as she got. Her mother was on fire. "What do you mean she's vaping? Are you vaping? What, you know how bad that is?" And she went into this whole thing about how bad it was, shut the daughter down completely. When if it would have been handled differently, she could have said, "Oh, how does that make you feel that your friend is vaping and that that's bad? What can I do for you? How can I show up for you?" But she couldn't.
When they come to you for help, you have to, right? The rule, like, you know, like growing up, if I was somewhere and somebody was drinking and I, there were no questions asked. Coming, and that was the rule. If that happens, don't ask. You're gonna come. I can try. I know I can call, and yeah. I'm gonna get the leadership and what I need from a parent. And I agree 100%.
So it's like you have to learn to listen before you react. Is that correct?
Yes, but the problem is if you don't do your own wounded work, you know your family of origins, what trips your trigger, you won't be able to do it. You
got to know your own baggage. You got to know your own, your own
exactly.
stuff.
Exactly. Right. You know, like my youngest daughter totally triggers that part that I'm not considered, that I'm always doing something wrong, that it's never going to be enough. If I didn't know that, I would react over and over. Instead, I'm able to be in a position to say, "Okay, here it is again. That's coming up for you. Just breathe. Breathe. This isn't about you."
Yeah.
Yeah, it does work.
I like it. I like stuff. It. It's a very good conversation. I'm liking this. This is
me
good.
Too.
And I'm not even prepared. This extra preamble, but I want to go into the next segment. All right.
Okay, perfect.
Youth and radicalization. All right. So we all know that we're living in an age where the digital world has become a breeding ground for radicalization, hence my thought about dinner with the family.
Yeah.
We have seen young men seduced by echo chambers of hate and division, anger, until the line of rhetoric turns into violence and there's no more line. That line disappears. So Deborah, how do parents pierce through the digital fog, not to control, but to connect, so that their child doesn't just disappear into, like, you know, this Charlie Kirk situation? Who knows what happened in this? And again, I'm not alleged shooter, number one, alleged. And I don't want to get into that, but I'm saying something, there has to be something happening here. And, you know, they were talking about conversations on the server Discord and whatnot. Discord alleges that they didn't have any conversation. Right. And again, we're not here to discuss that. But
right.
How do you look through the fog and actually say, how do I address this?
You know, I think it's an earlier conversation. I don't think you can address what's going on after that happens. You know, if you did kill, you know, something bigger is happening here, because people that are teens that are grounded and have parents that are grounded and doing the work, unless there's a severe mental illness, don't usually just kill somebody.
Something, there has to be something, some propensity to see something, right?
Right. And I think that when, you know, for in my I raised myself. My parents really knew where I was never. And so if I had something going on, although I have to admit, when they saw me, you know, sleepwalking, having nightmares, they engaged. But I think if you're going to have children, recognize that this is a responsibility. This isn't just pop out a kid and hope for the best.
Right.
And because that isn't the case, especially when we have social media the way it is.
You don't know who's reaching into the bedroom of your kid all night long.
Right. Yeah. And I think
we as adults have to, as the
manage that.
And the mentor, we have to know this technology. We have to keep up with it, because how are you going to pay? How are you going to know what's going on if you don't have a clue about what's going on technology wise? You're not going to know what's going on in your
kids. Yeah, like in the gamer chat.
Gamers, their cell phones, right? Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
And they know all the workarounds to tracking stuff.
Oh,
and
believe me. They just create fake accounts if they've got it. I personally am a firm believer on not giving your 9-year-old a cell phone, not giving your 10-year-old. I mentor I think she's 13. She's a pretty aware teen, and she just got a phone, but it has no ability to go on social media.
Right.
Good.
And kudos to her mother, because her mother's probably catching slack for that. Right.
Of course. Yeah. The family's probably getting beat up, but I'm sure.
Right.
They come home every day. But here's the thing. I want to add to that.
Yeah.
You made me think again, not in the notes. When that kid goes to school, and I like that. I like that. A flip phone. Because you need to be able to reach your kid. Now, I know growing up, I had to be home when the lights came on kind of thing. I went out for 8 hours and disappeared and did all kinds of things. I hope my mom's not paying attention on the show, but probably doesn't watch me anyway. But you know, I did everything under the sun I shouldn't do. But I did come home when the lights went on. Now you have to have a cell phone. But what I wanted to say was, really, because I'm digressing from that, but what about the kids making fun of that kid because they don't have the phone? They don't have all the fancy features. You don't have Instagram, TikTok, Facebook. They laugh at the kid. And then the kid becomes more angered when they come home.
They don't want to feel like, oh, you're weird.
Yeah.
You don't have that. How do you
I'm not suggesting a flip phone. They've got iPhones out there. You don't have to put apps on. The mom knows, you know, there's no codes that only you have. And the mom looks at the phone. And, you know, the daughter was like, I don't even feel safe in my own home. I said, no, actually, what your mom's doing is making sure you're
making
safe.
You safe. Yeah. Because there's a predator waiting for you to go onto any social media and just say, I'm sad today. A bunch of weirdos are going to show up in your inbox.
Oh, especially with AI. They can make up a person.
Yeah. Yeah. Have you seen this? Oh, my. Yeah.
That's a whole different topic for sure.
I think we're in a lot of trouble. That. You know, and they're saying with the AI, their AI is there, but if we get AGI, artificial general intelligence, then it could do everything on its own without us.
Oh, I know.
And then they become the god, and they become the leaders, and we just become the puppeteers, kind of like the movie The Matrix, where they're just
using. I know.
Right? And that's a scary position to be in.
Scary. Right? You know, and I think we have to also just teach our kids that, you know, I get it that you don't have this, you know, and maybe put them in a school where not all kids have it. I don't know.
I like that. Yes, I like that.
I mean, this gal goes to a school that is here in Sedona that none of the kids get that. Maybe a couple, but most of them don't get social media and internet. Right. And so I just think that if you want your kids to be individual and you don't want your kids to follow the crowd, then you have to set it up that way. You can't cave. And teach your kid how to have self-esteem and be like, it's okay. So what? I don't have internet. Who cares? Right.
You know what goes with that great? It kind of goes in that with that ritual on that is, I believe, in school uniforms. So then this way, there is no distinction. Nobody's better. Nobody's got the finer clothes.
There's always going to be something, even with the uniforms with girls, they're always going to have something with judging by the hair or their book bag or their shoes. There's always accessories.
Body
that
shaming.
Girls will be making fun of either way, even if you have a uniform.
Body shaming really is a problem. I personally, and you know, I have a problem with people that do that. Uh-huh. Whatever you look like, if you're comfortable in yourself and you go out, whatever you're wearing that night, I am happy with you. I actually respect you. And we've been at events where I've seen somebody make fun of somebody or body shame. And I've gone to the defense and said, hey, who do you to say something? Because this person is a little larger than somebody else. And they're wearing shorts that you are laughing at them. But they're comfortable in those shorts. And they're happy wearing them out. And whoever they're with likes it. Mind your business. It's none of your business.
Right. And that's a big thing I say is it your business? If not, your plate is full enough with your stuff.
Yeah, so you already have enough
over here. Don't jump over there and judge others. And most people that do judge even kids, it's because they're in such harsh judgment of themselves. So,
right. And I always say, you know, like my response every time, like about name brand or whatever, so, you know, it's not what you wear, it's how you wear it. And you know what? Totally. If you don't like the way I wear it, oh, well, you're doing something wrong then.
And there are different tastes out there on everything. There's somebody that loves every body type and every type. Mm-hmm. So,
right.
I mean, it's so such a cruel world. And then on top of it, at least for women, I believe, and correct me if I'm wrong, everybody in the room here too, all these fake AI models out there are giving these young girls perceptions of, and the guys too. Right. You don't want a young boy to see that, or even a regular influencer that is using filter after filter after filter.
Oh, and
they don't look like, girls don't look that way. They just don't.
Trust
me, guys, if you're listening or watching, gentlemen, I've seen plenty of women up close and personal. None of them look like anything you're seeing on TikTok, Instagram. They don't. And you know what? Look past. The skin is only a quarter inch thick. There's a lot more beyond that.
And back then, you had to compete with 17 magazine. Now you have to compete with the internet.
Right. Yeah. Even in magazines. And so it's just like, you have to learn how to have that love inside of you. And the way parents can help them is if they develop it, they understand themselves so that they can then hold space for that place. But if they don't feel it, they're always on a diet. They're looking at themselves. Oh my gosh, my hips are this, my hips are that, you know, then you're modeling the wrong thing.
And I think that's where a father comes in to keep play on this, because they need to, even the girl should tell them, this is what's acceptable from a man. And this is what an acceptable woman should be doing, who has respect for herself.
Yes.
And for a guy to a girl, a man, this is how you respect a woman. This is how you should treat a woman. And you don't want, and I don't want your kid to have the woman that is half naked on the internet either, on social media. There's a happy medium. Everybody is to blame. And everybody here has an opportunity to learn and become better.
Change.
Right. It's a different world.
Deborah, how do you stop a teen from feeling so alone?
You know, I don't know that. I think that's, the family unit. I think that loneliness is an epidemic again. Everybody, it's almost like we're disconnected from source or love or whatever you want to call it. And so if then the family unit isn't connected, then, you know, like maybe the father's not present or someone isn't present or the mother works a lot, then it's hard to feel connected. It's hard to just feel connected. And I think that conversations help people feel connected. I think checking in with your kids, like, what's going on? Where are we at? You know, instead of, and believe me, I was a single mom. I was not a perfect mother. I was working a lot of hours. My kid's dad did not participate except give money and, you know, just enough. And so it was me. And it's not easy to be a single mom and have to do everything and then have enough energy to hold the space at the end of the day, right?
And then you have to have self-care.
Exactly. And so I think my biggest thing from a young age was, I need therapy. I've got trauma in my childhood. I've got to figure this out. And then because of that, my daughters are more self-aware. They have their own stuff. I have my stuff, but we're aware of it,
right?
You know, instead of just having it, projecting it. And so I do believe that on some level, my daughters both know that I'm available. Do they feel completely connected? Probably not. I don't feel totally connected in this world. I don't know how a normal person in this world could feel totally connected. Like, and you talked about Charlie Kirk. I'm not in total alignment with all of his beliefs, but the death of him is tragic. It's just tragic
that people watch and they think that this is becoming normalized. Like, we're seeing it and no response to it.
It's not normal, people. Really.
It's not normal. No kid should see anybody ever get shot.
No.
Right. They're trashing him and they're good. And I'm like, who?
And they're going to regret that. All of them are getting fired. And they're going to regret that 10 years from now because it's not going to go anywhere. And when they job interview 10 years from now, that video of them making fun of somebody being shot in front of children, in front of people, is terrible. It is terrible.
No. Yeah.
You know? Yeah. I mean, it's just getting me started on all that.
As humans, it's like, human what
decency.
Happened?
Right. Decency. Basic human courtesy and decency.
And just love. Like, and I do believe when I hear things, because I saw a musician, I won't name his name, on a video, just slamming him like, yeah, this is great about his death. And all I did was have compassion for the guy saying that, because if to say that and to in front of a crowd, he has to be severely
wrong with him.
Wrong?
Yes, yeah.
I agree. Something is wrong with
you. Wrong if with you, you say that,
if you feel it's okay, you know, if you feel it's okay that a human being's life was taken for talking about something that you didn't like. They didn't beat anybody up. They didn't hurt anybody. Words. We have a constitution. We have a First Amendment.
Exactly.
It was stripped. A life was stripped. You don't have to agree with everything.
Just for speaking what you don't believe? You think
especially when he's letting you come to the microphone to say what it is you want and then have a debate. I like a healthy debate. I like to hear both sides.
Yeah, me too.
Yeah.
Well, I have another good question.
Yeah, go ahead.
For a teenager, you know, like how most parents, they try to be involved. Number one question they always ask, how was your day? What did you do?
No, right.
Nothing.
Good.
So how do you get, what can you do to like avoid that that teen saying nothing happened?
Yeah. You know, something happened during the day.
Right now, you know?
Right. I mean, I think that the conversation, again, can't start when they're 15. I think that you have to be engaging your kids when they're really, really young in good conversations. That's why you mentioned the dinner table. The dinner table is a great place. No TV, no social media. We're just going to talk. What was your, my daughter does this thing. What was your rose for the day? And what was your thorn for the day?
Oh, I like that.
So that makes them think about, so what was great and what was the thorn, instead of how was your day, is such an open-ended,
it could be anything. It's like everybody says, hey, how are you? It's always going to be great, right? Yeah. Everybody says great. Yeah. Nobody really cares. They say, how are you? Yeah. They say, how are you? Nobody cares.
Fine.
Yeah. Good.
Great.
Yeah, nobody. I always say they ask me, "How are you doing?" I'm like, "Good," but nobody listens anyway. So, who cares?
And no one really cares when they ask that question. It's not caring. But if you say, "Let's talk about our thorn and our rose," like what was
I
your
like that? That is
today?
A good one. That's that a really way, good, a good way. Good one. I like it. I really do like that. I really do. You probably connected with somebody.
Can you look at the rose a different way now?
Yeah. Oh yeah, rose. Yeah, we got a production person. That's why you're looking. I'm wondering why she's staring at me. I got something on my face, and now it's because of her name. But honestly, you know what?
Right.
But that is a fabulous way of looking at it.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah, you have to spark a different conversation. You can't just say, "How was your day?" They are never going to engage. But
anything
if you
exciting?
Ask
I like
questions.
It.
What was your thorn? They have to engage, and then don't try to fix it. Don't try to go, oh, well, that wasn't that big of a deal. Just say, that must have really stunk. That must have really hurt your feelings. If I can do anything for you to help
empathetic, like empathy. Yeah, empathy, not sympathy. Empathy. Not compassion, just throwing, I understand. No, empathy.
Yeah. Like, and
I have a question, and I want to go into the next segment after this because we're going to go. This is a great, it always happens when we get a good guest.
And then we just think about it.
And we're, you know, my thought is that you're like, do you give them an example in your childhood when they say, this happened to me? Does the parent say, hey, you know, I had something like that? Maybe not directly, because then you don't want to look too old, whatever. You don't want to be their friend. But you want to say, hey, you know what? Growing up, I had a situation or this happened or something to give them an idea that they're not alone. It's happened and how you dealt with it.
That's right? Tricky.
It is.
Because if they're telling you, so just kind of relate it to a friend you're telling a friend what's going on in your day and they go, oh my gosh, the same thing happened to me. Do you feel heard?
Oh, Gotcha. I like that. You got me there.
They don't feel heard.
You're not validated. Okay. Right. They didn't validate. Yeah. All right.
Oh, now we're on to yours. Okay. Instead, I don't think that works with teens.
I like this. So then now that I said that, what is the appropriate way then?
Just say, wow, like, yeah, I could really see how that would be upsetting. You know, what about it exactly did you upset you, or what were your feelings around that? Jump into their reality. Start asking them questions because they came to you for a reason with that. And right. So I would hold off on the comparison thing because I think it kind of does a reverse thing of making them feel like they're like, whatever. Yeah, of course you had it. You walk through the snow. You know?
All right. Yeah. We all walked both ways in the snow barefoot, right? Uphill, both
right.
ways.
Yeah. Yeah. So I think that that's really important.
That was it. Yeah. Both ways. Uphill, both ways.
I know. Believe me. I know.
Yeah.
Walking across town to the next.
I really did though walk like 2 miles to school. I honestly did.
I know, me too.
I don't really care. It's raining. I don't care. She's like, I don't
care. You're still going to school.
Right. Make sure you're back before the lights go on. I'm like, but right. It's raining. The lights went on. And because I was that kid.
Oh, I love the message that would come on the TV. I think it was after the news. Do you know where your children are?
I still think they yes. still have that.
And they don't have children on milk cartons anymore either.
They're like, children. Where are my children?
The reminder. Well, how about the new one? Do you know if your children are on social media? Do you know what they're doing right now? They're in the room. What are they? You hear the typing going on?
Yeah.
That's great. And one more thing, because now I'm mugging this conversation. Mm-hmm. The milk carton child, they said that. Not only are you helping the child that's missing on that milk carton that mm-hmm. makes somebody see them, but you're also opening and sparking the conversation for your child to say, why is that little boy or girl on our milk carton? And it's a reminder every day that danger is out there.
Right.
And it just kind of helps open that dialogue, I think. What say you?
Yeah, mm-hmm. I agree. I think that anytime you can open the dialogue, and you don't have to say, what do you think? It's like, if you see like People Magazine and the girl's really thin and they're talking about the body, just say, do you think that that's a good body? What do you think about this cover? Right. And get their input. Oh, you know what? She seems really thin. She seems, you know, whatever. Just say, yeah, right. I'm seeing the same thing. But, you know, right. just sparking something because of that.
I like
this whole situation with, it is important to be able to speak my own truth. If you don't agree with me, I don't care. That's okay. I don't care. But still let me speak my truth.
Right.
Don't shut me down.
I agree. Yeah. And the second somebody mm-hmm. comes into something yelling and arguing, they have no intelligent conversation to be had. You're not going to get anywhere in your conversation.
No.
If you want to debate me, I'm happy to do it. And I'll tell you what I believe. And right. I'll hear what you say. Like I said to you, what say you? You told me right off the bat, don't go with the, comparison. And I heard you and I like it.
Yeah.
But why people are not hearing anymore. They're just right. automatically attacking.
They're going
to Twitter and Instagram and TikTok to get their answer. All right, we got to go to the next segment.
Yeah. Okay.
Knowing yourself as a parent is our next segment. So you have written that parents must confront their own unhealed wounds, because those wounds do become the soil in which their children do grow. If a parent has never faced their own personal traumas, how can they possibly protect their child from inheriting the trauma that they indeed right. have?
Absolutely. Yeah, I think that doing that work, that trauma work, is the only way of removing it out of the lineage, right? Meaning I can clean it up for my mother, for my mother's mother, but also I can help in that aiding. My kids know I do my work. That's one thing they say. She's so committed to her cleaning up her own trauma. And so I can help them see where the trauma is so their kids might not be in that situation. But if you cannot address your own fears and your own trauma, you will never be able to hold space for your kids' fears. You can't. because your fear and trauma come up and then you project it onto them and then they shut down because they can't handle your fear and their fear at the same time.
That's a great way of putting it.
I mean, they can't.
Yeah.
And so yeah. I actually, when I was mentoring, I think she was 14 or 15, I was trying to encourage her to go to her mom about this. Well, how come, you should go to your mom about and talk to your mom. And she's like, there's no way. My mom is way too emotional. And I can't deal with her emotions and mine. She said that to me.
That's very mature.
That makes me want to control my emotions if I'm going to talk.
Honestly, yeah. And you know, it kind of goes back to what we were saying before. And the child sees the dynamics, right, of that stuff. Yeah, and it's, yeah, the role model. And you know what? Here's another one, and it's not in my talking point, but let's do it. Therapy is not a scary word. It's not I think everybody would benefit from having an opportunity to talk to somebody.
Yes.
And you don't have to blame it on the mother, right? You don't have to blame everything. Not everybody's got all, like you said, all these fake diagnoses out. No. It's just good to have an objective opinion that's not a friend or a family member. You're paying this person or whatever, how insurance is paying the person. And they're just going to give you a professional thought.
Hopefully.
Right?
Hopefully.
I question what goes on in the schools today. You know?
I mean, I think that, you know, that's why I think my retreat is so nice. I'm not a licensed therapist. And when they come in, this is about getting to know yourself and your trigger points with each other within the family dynamic. And so if you do know that, you won't project on each other. Therefore, you'll have a better relationship with each other. Right. And so, you know, the therapy that I have had, some of it has been very good. Some of it is spinning in the trauma. And I don't think you need to be in that blame game trauma for long.
Living in the past, right?
Yeah.
You recognize your deficit. You recognize your own deficit. And then you make sure that you, I think that we have a duty to do one level better than our parents did.
Absolutely.
You know, and that's all you can expect. You don't need to, I mean, there's some people that are going to excel hugely, but you have a duty. And this is the first generation of youth that potentially are not as well off as their parents. Work
right.
Everybody else has been a growing number,
I know,
huge numbers, and it's not. And I just think we have a duty as that older generation to make sure that they are at least one bit higher than we were. And then we've won. We succeeded.
If you look at generations of trauma, every generation gets better and better and better. And that's what I try to explain to the daughters that are just cutting their mothers out because they're like, I'm cutting it out because that I'm cutting out the generational trauma. Generational trauma can't be cut out by cutting a person out. It's by changing your behaviors, knowing your woundedness and healing, not cutting a person out. Now, I get it. If the person is really abusive and you can't heal but some of the stuff I hear about is just seriously not abuse. It's just someone being human. And I think, but I do know that there is abuse. And if a parent can't stop
Can you cite an example for the folks listening or watching of what, because you said some stuff is not abuse.
Well,
give us an example of that, maybe.
I mean, like,
I don't want to put you on the spot or sandbag you on it.
Okay, like a parent was like, I've been paying my 24-year-old's rent now for 6 months, helping her get on her feet, paying for everything. As soon as I set a boundary and said, hey, I've got to stop. You've got to get a job. You've had 6 months. The daughter's like, I'm cutting you off. This is abuse because they can't set boundaries. That is not abuse. That her mother was enabling her. Right? And that, as opposed to abuse, is demeaning words, physical abuse, you know.
Neglect.
But when you're 24, you can't really use neglect. Do your own work.
Yeah.
You're an adult already.
Yeah.
You're an adult. Stop. Stop blaming your parents, right? For anything.
Right. You have to recognize your deficit, I think, and say, all right. And everybody has a something in their family, a cycle. It doesn't have to be abuse or it could be something stupid as that the mother never said, I love you to the child. They grew up without that.
100%.
You have to make sure that you do that because you know how you felt coming out without that. Right. I think you should do that.
And then you would say, I love you to
that
your
little
child.
Step, that, something little. But you're breaking the cycle regardless. So it could be as little as that, or it could be drinking, alcoholic, you know, drugs. Physical abuse, all that. You break the, I think you just, you have to like recognize, like you said,
break
the cycle. Like you said in the beginning, and we both went back and forth. And I even said in my opening monologue, let's not be responsive. Let's be proactive, not responsive and reactive. Yeah. You know, recognize that there's a deficit, that there's an issue, and then maybe we can resolve it.
And the parents need to recognize that. But when kids become a certain age, then they have to then go to therapy, not do the blame game, because blaming is powerless. You know, it's like, I remember dating a guy, I was young, and he just cheated on me the whole time. I went to therapy. I didn't go into therapy saying he's a blah, blah, blah. I went in, I'm like, something's going on here and I need to figure it out that I didn't feel.
Why do you think that's okay?
I didn't know it. I took full ownership. And I think that that's something we're really lacking right now is taking ownership. It's always about blaming.
Yeah. I like it. I like it.
I'm passionate about this.
Yeah. I can see that. You got us into a great conversation. We're running great timing. Our time slot's going to be broken, but it's going to be available for download after, which is fine.
I have a question.
No, we're going to keep going. Okay. We go over the hour. It'll be iHeart. We'll still have it indexed for listen. Even if we break the hour time slot.
Deborah, how do you heal when you're broken inside?
So
as a parent, you're saying, right?
As a parent.
Yeah.
What do you mean? How do you feel? Is that what you said?
How do you heal when you're broken inside?
You got to get outside help because you can't fix what's broken inside with the mind that broke you. Because I do believe it's a mind. We have the love mind, the God mind. I use God mind. I like it.
We need to use that word more often. There's nothing wrong with that word.
I don't consider myself a religious person. But then we have that ego mind that's constantly saying you're always doing something wrong. There's something fundamentally wrong with you. What's wrong with you? Or, you know, that you have to become aware of that voice, because if you can't be aware of it, you can't shift it. You can't shift if you don't understand it. So when you're looking for a therapist, if a therapist doesn't lead you, I mentor therapists, by the way, and I've done retreats with them. The first thing I say is, do you know your belief systems? And they're like, what do you mean? How do you do therapy and not know what your beliefs are?
Right. Because you bring that bias. And that's what I think you were thinking before when you said objectively, you have to look at who your therapist is. If you are believing God, but you don't have any specificity on what religion, or if you're Christian or not, or whatever you might be, you need to make sure that you're going to a therapist that is sort of aligned with you on your fundamental values, right?
Right, fundamental. But I will tell you, because I'm not religious, I'm spiritual, but I ask them, do you have a higher power? What do you call it? Because to me, it's all the same. It's love at the core. I don't care if you're Christian, Muslim. Right. It doesn't matter. It's love.
God is love, always.
Love.
I mean, I don't think any God is different for any religion.
You can say it whichever way.
There's one universe, maybe, I don't know, we're finding out maybe a multiverse is, if you should check out the episode on that. But just for what we're talking today, there's one universe and there's one higher power over everybody, regardless of what your belief system is. You have to believe there's some design going on here that kind of is setting the way. And love, right?
Exactly.
Yeah. Peace, love, and happiness.
That's in every language, good or bad.
And like fear or love. It's just like if I'm acting out of fear, how do I bring that part of me that knows better, that knows my, that higher part in me that's love. How do I activate that? Because right now,
especially if you didn't get it right, as a, you didn't get it as a child, you have to make sure that you find a way to act. Like you said, I like that. You used the word activate. I like that.
Yeah.
How do you, I like that. That's a great, that was a great one. I hope that everybody got that. We'll make sure we get that in the description. Activate. I mean, it's great that it's activated because it's in you. It's always in you. Whether you had it,
always.
It's
just,
it was, whatever your higher power is, it in, you have a conscious, it's you there. Have a soul.
Innate.
As a soul.
Exactly. It's innate.
It's there. And you got to find it.
Right. When I do retreats, I'm like, this part of us, this love part, is there. We're not going to pay much attention to that. We have to pay attention to the fear part and know it well so that we don't act out of it, and we can lean into this always, because we can't lean in if this is activated, that fear.
Fear-mongering.
Yeah.
And that's what's going on online. Bullying, cyberbullying.
It. Yeah.
It's fear-mongering.
You see it right now, like nobody's business, right?
Yeah. And I mean, we could do the same stuff. I mean, you're right. We're getting back to the school shootings, Charlie Kirk shooting, all of this.
It's all fear.
The nonsense and the fear mongering has people crazy. Like up, you know, I just think we're destroying a generation here. Mm-hmm. We're destroying children that think that, you know, that I don't know how it's acceptable. We were talking about this offset, even with Rose over here before. Mm-hmm. We were talking about it. Nobody should ever see anybody shot. Like, unless if you're in that business, military or law enforcement, and you shouldn't even then. You shouldn't even then, but it's a job, right?
Yeah. So even if people don't act like it does harm inside, it does harm inside.
Rose was saying over here, she said, like, you signed up for that to see that if you went to raise your hand for to take an oath in the military or law enforcement or EMS or fire, you're going to run into shots fired and that stuff. But these children, these students should never see that. And then it is disgraceful that they replay it on air.
Oh.
I remember, and I'm going to go back to a point that we talked.
I was shocked.
Yeah, we talked
just
about
scrolling, and then all of a sudden I just see like the blood.
I don't want to see it. Yeah, they
I
should screen that out.
I want to see that.
Yeah, like, nobody should see that.
Too much.
His wife,
the face reacting haunts.
Nobody should ever see that. His family should never. That needs to go away. I remember years ago, and I'm military veteran. You remember when the first contractor in Afghanistan was beheaded, and I don't want to say his name. I saw the video.
Yeah.
It was horrific video. Oh. And actually, I got to be honest.
That drew the line to play that.
It made me like
wheezy.
I got to tell you, it scarred me for life. And I was in there. And then I remember my mom, I was deployed. My mom reached out and I said, you never got to worry. You're never going to see me holding a sign up begging the country to withdraw. And you're not going to, I'm going to fight back. So I'm killed, not beheaded. You know, they got a contractor, not a soldier. They got a guy that was not armed, that was fixing something. They didn't go after me. They didn't come after me. That was armed and ready to come back at you. But watching that horrific video, and getting back to this, I signed up for this. I was devastated by that.
I feel sorry for the whole family of that.
Too much for the psyche.
Somebody said, and we were talking about the cheering of Charlie Kirk, the death, and the kids. I remember after I saw the hanging of Saddam Hussein in Iraq. Whatever your opinion was, I did not like it. I don't want to see that. Nobody needs to see that. Mm-hmm. Whatever they did or didn't do, I don't want to know about it. I don't want to see it. And these things need not replay on there. Yet they're filtering out on social media, on YouTube specifically and stuff. If you use the word suicide. We don't say unalived on this show. You can't say that word. You can't say the word COVID, right? Or any of that, because then they screen it out. They put, we don't, you know. So they're filtering out voices that are talking about real things. COVID was real.
Yeah.
Suicide is an epidemic amongst people. So at that, you know, we're filtering that out, yet you can watch murder.
Right. No, well, you know, and that's a whole different topic that I avoid at all costs.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it just got me onto thinking.
It was just
a conversation we were having. And, you know,
I do believe that the psyche can't handle seeing that kind of trauma. Now, I'm a 68-year-old woman. I can't handle it. A 14-year-old absolutely does not.
That's what I mean. I didn't like it as a soldier seeing that stuff.
Right.
So how are these young people, right? They're seeing it, and it's okay. It's not okay. It's wrong, and I think that we're damaging.
That's the problem.
We're damaging a generation.
Too much data, too much information. I can't
way
remember
too much data, too fast.
The book I read, but it was about the digital world, and he was like, it came on too soon, too fast, and now we're in hyperdrive, and our nervous.
Oh, I read that. I know who it is. I don't want to plug it on the show. I know who it is. He used to work for a major major company that does AI.
Okay. He said our bodies can't. Our nervous system can't handle how fast things are going.
Yeah. You almost don't see anything. The attention span is gone. The instant gratification is there. Whatever you need to have something to reach for,
sidetracked.
Right?
Yeah. You get distracted when you're looking for something and then all of a sudden, you go to this part and it's like never ending.
And people pull in and, you know, things change. I don't, it's terrible. Let's go to the next segment.
Yeah.
Okay. I want to let you know you have 9 minutes and I have to wrap up.
We're good. I got one more on and then a closing monologue.
Okay.
Boundaries versus control. When tragedy strikes, a school shooting, a violent crime, the instinct of many parents is to tighten the grip, to impose stricter rules, to confuse control with safety. Like you said before, you know, with that one child that they were I feel so unsafe at home because mom is watching my phone.
Right.
So with that, Deborah, what does it look like to build appropriate boundaries that protect the child and youth, whatever you want to call them, without suffocating them and including the teen in the process without having that become a rebellion against you?
Yeah. And I think that what you just said, the last part is including them. First of all, you have to let your child go to school unless you're going to homeschool. They're going to go to school and you don't have any idea what's going on at school, right? I mean, anything can happen as we have seen. And so I think having them aware, I think being aware of their surroundings, being aware of what's going on, listening to their, you know, like giving your kids the education, like, is your friend talking about this? Is he talking? So that they can be more aware. But not saying you're not going to school anymore. You know, I'm going to keep you at home. Or even with boundaries at home, it's like, well, let's talk about this. And I'm big on boundaries. I think kids need boundaries. But I'm talking about taking out the trash, doing your bedroom. This is when I want the trash out and have consequences.
Right. But it starts with responsibility. Right.
And talking to them like, hey, we're a team here. What would happen if your dad and I decided not to work anymore, being a part of the team? And what would happen?
Where would you be?
Right.
Yeah, where would you be?
Yeah. No Wi-Fi, no cell phones. What would you be?
You'd have no electricity.
Mommy and daddy can't pay for it.
No food, no nothing there, right?
That's what I mean. Oh, no.
Yeah.
So you're a part of the team. So how do you want to contribute? Because we need you to contribute, quite frankly.
Yeah.
We can't carry the team.
Right.
And then give them
No I in team.
And then they create, well, I could do this, I could do this, I could do that. And a lot of times they create more than you would. And then okay, well, what do you think the consequence should be if you don't do that? And let's get specific with that. Not, hey, I want you to clean your room. No, I want your room to look tidy every Sunday. So when you start your school day, you're dealing with a clean palette.
Yeah.
You know, I want your bathroom to be clean.
Feel good.
They're
going to see what you do too, how you are, how you respect yourself, how you present yourself to others, how your home presents to other people.
Yeah.
They see. So if you don't take care of those things, how can you expect them to take care of their
kids? I love this quote. If you make your bed, in the morning. That's the first task you did for
you
the
got
day.
That from the famous to make your bed Navy that. SEAL. Uh-huh. You know that book, The Navy SEAL, and he did the college.
Yes.
You've completed one thing. You were successful already when you started your day.
In AA too. I've mentored AA people, and they're like, I just have to make my bed every morning.
Right. The military's like that too.
You feel better too at the end of the night.
Oh, you beat me too. You stole it. She stole that from his speech, and I was going to use it. I was going to say, at the very least, you come home and you got a nice bed.
Yeah, right.
I dated a girl one time that said she always made the bed because, not for any other reason, it got rid of the bad dreams from the night before. It kind of made a little sense to me. It was a fresh bed, fresh evening, right? It cleared the energy, right? Freshened it out.
And I have another question.
And then we got your 9-minute window, right?
Right. Okay. You got another question.
Right. How do you make rules without losing love?
Without losing love?
Yes.
How do you make rules
without losing love?
Love, right? That's what you're saying.
I
think the losing love part, I think if you can do the rules together, but also know that there is going to be some rules. You're going to have a curfew, you know, but also if they're good about their curfew and they're, I remember one gal I mentored, she was 17 and she had to be home at 10 o'clock on the weekends.
Oh, that's hard. Yeah. That's worse than having a flip phone right now.
You know what? You want your kids at that age to spread their wings that last year, that last 2 years while they're in the house. So if they do make a mistake, because otherwise they go off the deep end in college.
Wild. Yes, I 100% agree. It's the straight A student all through school in high school that sleeps with everybody and drinks and does drugs in college. Mm. And it's the wild child, that was me, in high school, that ended up getting a 3.9 and ended up getting a master's degree and a law degree and what I'm working on now.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there has to be a happy medium. I mean, I was suspended a lot and in trouble, but, you know, and my mom, I got paid price for that curfew, but, you know, that makes a very good point there. You know,
you got a little bit
of freedom. Give them a chance to fail.
Real love isn't ever lost.
30 to 12.
You give them the leash to fail. You want them to fail once or twice so then they can see there's a consequence, right? Yeah.
Yes.
And I agree
to make mistakes while they're under.
Every mistake is a building block to the foundation of tomorrow. Everything you do.
And an opportunity to learn.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I had one mother say, I don't want my teen to make mistakes. And I'm like, then she's never going to learn. And that is just so unrealistic.
Yep. Mm-hmm. You are spot on. You're spot on. We're at your 9-minute, I'm sure. So before I close out, I want to give you 30 seconds. It was great. I want to give you 30 seconds or whatever you want for the next minute to just whatever your closing statement is. How anybody else can reach you if they're not watching the screen and they're listening, put your contact information, all that stuff. It floor is yours.
I do a free consult for people. If they go on my website, it's a 20-minute free that usually turns into 30.
Just spell it out to them, to their listeners, if they're listening. What's the website?
EmpoweredTeensAndParents.com. But I also have one for adults, mother, daughters, which is SedonaSoulRetrieval.com. But either way, you
something
can
for fathers. I'm feeling masculinity right now.
I will do a father daughter retreat. Fathers just don't call me. They don't.
I'm so sorry to hear that. I really am.
I know they don't unless they call me because the mother daughter is in such angst.
Yeah.
So, call me. My book is such an easy read. And it's
hold your book again. Let them know the books.
What if your teen isn't the problem? A guide to conscious parenting. It is so easy. And it's so thin because it's nothing but meat. And I think that even if you don't have a teen, this is a great book. I had someone that didn't even have kids that read it and said, I learned so much about myself because it talks about what kind of a family you grew up in, what your old beliefs could be. and then responding and reacting, what the difference is. And I go through every chapter like that.
And you know, so, I did read it. I actually read it before we came on because I did. That's why I asked these kind of questions, because I knew exactly what you had. And I actually got some feedback from people that did your retreat. So I know a little bit about it. That's why I asked these questions.
Yeah.
And I know you got the window, but I'm saying it was great. It was a good, it was really impactful. It said, hey, you know, here it is. And it was quick. Yeah. It was a quick, but it was to the point. And it was reflect. Yes. It was a lot of reflection. I reflected as I was looking at it. I'm like, reading it. I'm like, okay, wow. Never thought of this. Never thought of that. That you're one of the sections you had, and I don't remember how you worded it, but it was like reflecting. I'm reflecting off of me something that I went through. Because I didn't look. There it was. Yeah. What does it say that word again?
Projecting.
Projecting. Thank you. I knew it. I got it close, but I couldn't remember exactly. But it was like, if I didn't even know I suffered some kind of trauma, I didn't even realize maybe. And that in that when I read that in there, I said, I wonder if I'm putting out something to anybody. And that and not as a parent, as a person. Am I putting something out? You know, it's kind of like the guy who the guy that goes to the gym 400 hours a week and has the flashy car. He's maybe overcompensating for something, right? That kind of thought.
Absolutely.
Are you projecting something? I know I've used your word. Am I projecting something to the child? Are you projecting something that I don't even know I had?
Yes.
And that is why you were so, that was a hard punch, that section in the book, I thought.
Nice. Well, I'm glad.
I thank you so much.
Thank you.
It was wonderful. That. It was so wonderful.
That's great.
Folks, empowering teens and parents. Deborah Beck, thank you so much.
Thank you, guys.
Pleasure. What a great interview. What a great interview.
Definitely opened up my mind and changed the way I would think in the future as well. So I feel like I'm prepared.
if you are listening or watching, we will have the information with her website and her book. When you go to iHeartRadio or even to Spotify or any of those, it will be available for you to click on it and go right there. I'm not making any money on it. It goes right to the cause. But I do want to send you there. It will be there. With that, tonight, we faced not just the headlines, but the wounds. We have looked at America's children, really. Not just as statistics, not as news stories, but as living proof that whether our nation will rise or fall, we still have to be a nation. We spoke of Charlie Kirk with reverence. For his voice was silence where freedom should have reigned. Freedom should have reigned. We remembered two children in Minneapolis whose lives ended long before they truly had a chance for their life to begin. We mourned the students in Evergreen, Colorado. And yet we faced the reality of teenagers in New York City with illegal firearms shooting weapons in the street, bringing firepower before bringing knowledge and wisdom before they even hit adulthood. Each story is unique, but together as one, they are not a story, they are a truth. A nation that fails its children has failed itself. But through the work of people like Deborah Beck and the Empowered Teens and Parents program, we are reminded that failure is not inevitable. Families can heal. You truly can heal. Parents can rise to the occasion, and children can still thrive, and our future can still be redeemed. It's not set in stone. I mean, we can do that. So tonight, I will not close with despair. I will close with a sense of duty, because it is not just Deborah's fight. It's not just the fight of one book, of one retreat, or of one movement. It's the fight of every parent, the fight for every teacher, every leader who refuses to let fear be the final word, because fear is not the final word. You know, if we choose courage over fear, and we choose awareness over ignorance and connection over silence, then tonight's pain and the things we discuss will become tomorrow's strengths, and our children will inherit not a broken world, but a better world. As always, I thank you for coming to the Hostile Zone. I'm Eric A. Sinani, and this is Miss Bianca C. And remember, 360 times 365. 180 forward, 180 backwards. makes 360, your head on a swivel, times 365 days a year, because trust me, danger is working everywhere and it's not taking a day off. So you can't take a day off. And final note, make sure you read Deborah's book. Share the message. Take the narrative that we discussed today and the wonders of what she put in the book that was so to the point and impactful, and recognize what it is that you have in your past that might be, as she would say, projecting to your child, or to even if you don't have a child, to anybody that you engage as you move forward.
I'm definitely getting a copy.
No, absolutely. Not my copy. But thank you for coming to the Hostile Zone. As always, God bless America. Stay safe.
Oh, say, can you see by the dawn's early light what so proudly we hailed at the twilight's last gleaming, whose broad stripes and bright stars through the perilous fight, for the ramparts we watched were so gallantly streaming, and the rocket's red glare, the bombs bursting in air, get through the night, that our flag was still there.
And she's not going anywhere.
Oh, say does that star spell